Well, good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Wednesday, January 24th, kind of a rainy morning, but still a morning in winter. And thanks again for tuning in. I'm Susie Prez, one of your co-hosts, and across from me, smiling, is Chris Bessler.
Good morning, Susie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Chris?
It's actually a slushy, wet, kind of messy day out there, to tell you the truth.
I would say drive slow.
Oh, very slow. Yeah, very cautious driving, please. But we do have a great show for people today. We have Mayor Shelby Rongstad here in the studio with us. Hey, Shelby.
Good morning, listeners.
And we're going to be talking about, well, you're going to give us kind of the state of the city, how things went in 2017, and then we're going to talk about stuff that might be coming up in 2018. So,
yeah,
a ton of things to talk about.
That's right. And we'll go over the community calendar. But right now we can hear the weather from the National Weather Service. We are in a hazardous weather condition. And I think that means that we're in a winter storm warning. Today we can expect a high of 37 with 100% chance of rain and snow.
I think in the studio here, it's about 98, though, today. So.
We call this the sauna room.
Yeah, it gets kind of warm in here. But as we explained, this is the hot seat for you, Shelby. Yeah.
That's right. It's particularly hot in this seat.
Chance of precipitation today is 100%. Total daytime snow accumulation, 1 to 2 inches. But if it's 37 degrees, I think that's not 1 or 2 inches of rain. Up on the mountain, it's probably snowing very, very nice. Tonight, a low of 31, rain, snow, becoming all snow after 1 a.m., low around 31 degrees, and southwest winds 5 to 7 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation this evening, 90%. Then it kind of lowers down tomorrow, high of 35, 30 to 60% chance of precipitation, and on Thursday evening, low of 29, and snow showers likely. There you go.
And yes. You mentioned the mountain. Actually, they've had 12 inches in the last 12 hours. So it's a heavy snow. They're saying it's a heavy powder. They're predicting much more snow today and again tomorrow. So that's actually some pretty cool conditions for skiers.
I think it sounds good. I have a relative that just came in from Illinois, drove 2,100 miles in a couple days because he had a ski pass. He's going to get as much use as he can out of that ski pass. Perfect time to come back.
Yeah, good timing on that part. A couple other things going on outside. The first quarter moon is coming Wednesday. That's today, actually. Although I kind of doubt anybody's going to get to see it through those clouds. And the sunrise this morning was at 7:25 a.m. It'll set today at 4:31 p.m. We've gained in the last week 16 minutes per daylight per day as we're approaching the spring solstice now. So brighter days are ahead, folks.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
I can use that.
And other things going on around town? Well, there's actually some really cool performing arts happening this week. One of them is the play. It's an original play by Ben Olson, a local playwright. He is in this case anyways. It's called Death of a Small Town in the West. And this is an encore for this play. It was put on several years ago. And it's a little bit edgy for folks, I'll warn you. But it's also humorous and locally written. It kind of strikes a chord with folks. So that's happening.
And as they say, if you have young children, it's probably not quite appropriate.
Might not be. But it's playing Friday and Saturday at the Panada. Also, there is a great storytelling event at Heartwood Center called Klondike, The Last Adventure. That's happening Friday. And it's, I don't know if you know anything about that, Susie, this one?
You know, last week they had the people in from POAC to talk about it on the Thursday show.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, it'll be great. And then they're having, at the Heartwood on Saturday, they're having Robert Burns Night, Scottish Celebration. So go catch some great Scottish poetry, right?
Robert Burns,
yeah, he's a classic. So there's some really cool things happening. You can see more on our calendars on KRFY.org or sandpointonline.com. And there's always lots going on in town.
Yeah. So let's get to our guests. I think, Shelby, you're probably pretty ready to give us a big overview of what happened last year and maybe some taste of what's coming up.
That's right. Yeah. Should I just dive right in here?
Yes.
I'll just touch on a few of the highlights in 2017. There's a lot we could talk about there. I could probably spend an hour on that, but I'd really like to focus the majority of my time on looking ahead in 2018. But noteworthy in 2017, this is a time of year when I like to do my State of the City address and give listeners and readers. I'll be putting out a article as well in the Reader and the Bee this week to basically share kind of my thoughts on what's going on with the city, where we've been and where we're headed. So, but some big highlights for this year, we completed phase two of the fiber network project. That's a big deal. We signed what we called IRU, long-term leases with a few companies here in town that wanted to hop on our fiber network. So the city got hooked up as well as the county building and the school district here in town, but we expect to see service extended to residents here in the next, in this year. So that's something to look forward to. And ultimately that's going to mean just more affordable, more reliable high-speed internet for all of Sandpoint. Great news there. Of course, the street reversion was big news, the two-way street reversion downtown, diagonal parking on the streets and whatnot. There was a big change, took some getting used to, but all in all, I think it was well-received, and things are going as smoothly there as could be expected. There's going to be some significant changes there coming up ahead as we move into phase one of reconstruction this season. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. And then, of course, the roundabout, the Schweitzer Roundabout and Bridge project that was completed in November, that was big news. That's something that the city had been looking forward to for a long time. That bridge was in badly in need of replacement. And so we've got a safe, reliable route there now to the north of Sandpoint and to Schweitzer area. And that we're still we've got some artwork that is going out to bid right now for the center of that roundabout. Northern Urban Renewal Area is contributing some funds to be able to contract a nice art design that would go in the center there. So that's something that you'll be seeing come before council here in the next couple months.
So the art question, there's been a few people that have kind of grumbled about that, like, why are we putting art there? This actually functions as kind of a gateway to the city.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
The people coming down from the north, that as they enter Sandpoint, they get a feeling that they're being welcomed or they're entering something special.
That's right.
Is there going to be a gateway at some date at the south end of town where you come off the bridge?
Yeah, that's part of the plan. And in fact, that area was, we're talking on Superior Street there, was envisioned to be part of the downtown street revitalization project. However, at this point, it's entirely funding dependent. We're starting at 5th and Cedar and basically moving southeast. And when we run out of money, we run out of money. Yeah. So we think we can definitely make it down First Avenue to Pine. And then from there, we'll just have to see how the funds go. Yeah. So the comp plan revision for the northern urban area, the northern area of Sandpoint along Boyer there, that was a process that began in late summer, early fall, and was completed in the late fall. And that really gave us a new look at what's the 20-year vision for development in that area of town. And that was particularly significant because, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, the University of Idaho Boyer property there, that 77-acre parcel, is being put up for sale by the university. And they notified the city of that a couple of years ago. And we wanted to make sure, as a community, that we had ample public feedback on what is the long-term vision for development in that area of town. So we didn't just end up with something that was based on zoning from decades ago or from the comp plan in 2007, which at that time, what was envisioned for that area was a new University of Idaho campus. That's not feasible at this point because that funding is dried up and the university has decided to invest their resources elsewhere. So
on that particular issue, you've already had several public hearings.
Yeah, we have. There's been a number of workshops and other opportunities, including public hearings for the people to participate. Most of those happened, I think they all happened actually at City Hall. There was one that happened on site there at the University of Idaho Boyer property. We had good turnout. There was nearly 100 people that showed up to those meetings and gave input. And what we heard resoundingly was that recreation and open space was essential. That we dedicate at least a significant portion of that land to continued recreational use, and it's a lot of that is a wetland area. So that was obviously a high priority. Second priority would be affordable housing. That's something that we hear again and again, or workforce housing as it's called. We hear that again and again from the economic development community, from our larger employers. More and more, I'm even hearing that from our small employers here in town. That Sandpoint it's not as affordable as it could be, and certainly for somebody moving in on a modest income, it can be difficult to find a place to live, and that obviously has a huge impact on our economy. So that was really a big one. And then we initiated a strategic planning initiative at the beginning of the year in 2017. And really what came out of that was three primary goals that council came forward with. And that was to increase transparency, outreach, and engagement with the public, and fiscal responsibility. And so as part of that, the city engaged, contracted with opengov.com, which is an online platform that gives the city the ability to put all of their financial information in the hands of the public through our website online. And it's really a powerful tool. It also really helps the city leadership team and the council make what we call data-driven decision-making, because we can take all those numbers through this OpenGov platform. It really gives us a great way to easily look at where we're spending our money, where we're getting our revenues, and we can analyze that data in all kinds of different ways to really make decision-making a lot easier, because we can see the impact of our dollars and where we're prioritizing our expenditures and make decisions accordingly.
Is that opengov.com available now? Is it up and
running?
It is,
yeah. If you go to our website, right on the homepage, if you click on the finances link right on the front page, it'll take you there.
I'm sure it saves a lot of time for the workers at the city, because people request that information and now it's readily available.
That's right. Right. Yeah, it really is handy. And then also as part of that platform, OpenGov actually purchased this other company that has a product called Open Town Hall. And so we kind of came in right in the middle of this, and it really a good deal. I should mention that OpenGov, we embraced this platform so readily, and that's thanks in large part to Sarah Lenz, our new financial treasurer. And she really kind of took that on as her first project and took the bull by the horns and really brought the city up to where we needed to be to use that platform. And so OpenGov was so impressed that they basically just gave us the service for free, this new service called Stories that they offer, which normally we would have been charged a significant amount of money to contract that service. But they were really impressed with how easily we adopted the platform, and they wanted to use us as kind of a test case and a showcase for their own marketing purposes. So that was, yeah.
Can you track how many people are using it?
You know, we can, and I can't tell you what those numbers are right now, but yeah, that is something that we can follow.
That's the kind of thing it takes a while to build viewership of as people discover it. I'll mention some of the things that are on there. There's you can log in and you can see information on what are the city's revenue sources.
That's right.
What are the city's expenses? What is the city collected in the 1% local option tax? What does the city spend on police services? What does the city spend on fire services? And a whole bunch more. So that's the kind of information you can get. It's available 24/7 if you go to the cityofsandpoint.com website.
That's right. And this is just the beginning. Really, we can come up with any kind of story or any kind of outlook that we want to see with that information. So it's something that's still being developed as staff realizes other opportunities or other, I guess, noteworthy topics that we want to have listed there. We can certainly do that. So, and then part of that is Open Town Hall, and that's a really cool online platform that is also available through OpenGov, and that gives us an opportunity to be able to engage the public on any variety of issues where we can. Post an issue up on the forum with any kind of background information that's needed and invite the public to give feedback and help us make decisions. So we're going to be rolling that out right away, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. But the last thing that I want to mention that was really part of our strategic planning initiative was this what I was doing last year was called Lunch with the Mayor, and I'm changing it this year. Now I'm calling it the Mayor's Roundtable. And what it is a once-a-month gathering where I invite the public to join me in a comfortable setting and just discuss any issue that is important to the city that's relevant in the moment or any issue that's important to the citizens out there. So it really is just an open opportunity to sit down with me and discuss issues that our citizens are concerned about. So we were doing the last Thursday of the month, but we were switching it up for the beginning of 2018. Now it's the last Friday of the month. That's going to be at Cedar Street Bistro at 8 a.m. And the first one will be this Friday, 8 a.m. at Cedar Street Bistro. So I invite your listeners to come meet me there, and we'll have a cup of coffee and chew the fat, so to speak.
I was wondering what you learned this last year with Lunch with the Mayor. What are some of the things that you really gathered of interest for our community and the interaction and how people are engaging in wanting to know more?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And, you know, to be fair, I kind of seed the discussions with the article that I put out in the Reader or the Bee, the issue prior to the meeting. So, for instance, you'll be seeing an article come out in the Reader tomorrow, and it kind of seeds some discussion topics that we can then discuss on Friday. And so some of the hot topics have been vacation rentals, for example. That was under consideration by council and planning and zoning in 2017. And that's really, I guess I would say, a hot button issue. It's something that a lot of people have opinions about, strong opinions on both sides. It's something that impacts our whole community. So there was a lot of discussion around that and really some creative some potential solutions to come out of that. Just, you know, really sitting down with people one-on-one, you get to hear some thoughts that maybe don't necessarily come up at our council or planning and zoning meeting. So it gave us some new things to think about. And as a result, partially as a result, we actually are revisiting that ordinance, and it'll be back up before planning and zoning and council in early 2018. So we're still working on that one. That's a difficult issue that many communities are struggling with throughout the U.S., particularly small mountain towns or small resort towns, if you will, like ours. It's really something that can impact a community if it's not treated carefully. But it's also something that the state of Idaho has come out clearly and said, hey, look, this is a right of private property owners to be able to rent out their house as they choose. And so we're a little bit between a rock and a hard place in terms of how to manage that as a city. We want to give property owners every opportunity to take advantage of their property and supplement their income if need be. But at the same time, we need to protect the integrity, the safety, and welfare of our neighborhoods. So, but looking ahead in 2018, if I may.
You bet.
I would just want to say first, for those who have just tuned in, you've tuned in to the morning show here at 88.5 KRFY, and we're having a conversation with Sandpoint Mayor Shelby Ronstadt. And we've just looked at 2017, and we're about ready to look at 2018.
All right, so here we go. So I mentioned the open town hall on OpenGov, and we're really going to be rolling that out here in the next couple of weeks with a citizen survey. And that's a continuation of our strategic planning initiative that was began in 2017. And what that is an opportunity for the public to go online through our website and log on and fill out the survey. And what we're really trying to assess is, what do you think, public? What do you think about how the city's doing, how we're investing our resources? What are other opportunities maybe that we're not seeing? How are our, you know, should we invest in a different level of service? What are we doing right and what are we doing wrong? So it's really an opportunity. And I don't think we've ever done that in the city of Sandpoint. I certainly haven't seen it. So this is a great opportunity for us to really kind of test ourselves and get feedback from the community to see where we can do better.
So how are you going to push that out there? The key thing here is getting a lot of people to participate.
That's right. Yeah. And we will have a marketing campaign, if you will, around that.
Some publicity in the newspapers and stuff online to help people discover this. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So people should be watching for that in about 2 weeks, you think?
Yep. In the next couple of weeks. So, and you know, really there's no real timeline for this. So we can kind of take our time with this and wait until we get a reasonable number of responses. So it's not like we have a 3 week window or anything like that. So we've got plenty of time to get plenty of feedback. And then also coming up, continuation of the University of Idaho Boyer project. So, you know, where we left that basically was we did a comp plan revision and in that process, that University of Idaho property was part of that revision. However, now we're really just specifically looking at that University of Idaho Boyer property, and we want to take into consideration the community feedback that we got in the comp plan revision and what those priorities of the community were. And now we want to look at developing a plan for how to enable that development in the future. So the public will also be hearing a lot more about that in the near future. And then, of course, downtown revitalization will continue. Century West has a presentation to City Council on February 7th for Phase 1 project of the streets, which is going to be from 5th Avenue on Cedar down to 2nd. That will hopefully happen this year. Bids will be going out at the end of February. And we're also going to look at Phase 2 design and scope of work for that next section, which would be 2nd and Cedar around the corner down to Bridge Street there.
Which would not probably be 2019.
That would probably be 2019-20.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and, let's see, 2019
yeah.
actually.
Yeah. So what is likely to happen this year in that section of Cedar from 5th to 2nd is people should be aware that's going to be dug up. There's going to be some underground infrastructure improvements. And then come back with this streetscape design that Century West and the city have been working on, which looks really cool. If people have not seen those drawings, with wider sidewalks and the ability for restaurants to have little cafe areas and more trees and the bulb outs probably are going to be continued because that shortens the distance that pedestrians have across streets.
Yeah.
So it's a major kind of redesign of the downtown that if folks are interested in this, they should be keep an eye on it.
That's right. And sidewalk lighting will be an important
and lighting too. Yes. Too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in a part of that, there's going to be stormwater management integrated into this. So we can do our part to help filter that dirty car water that comes off the streets.
Yeah. So rather than just dump it into the lake, as we're seeing in some other streets, there are swales being designed that capture that water and filter it down. And it's a much more environmentally friendly way to deal with stormwater.
That's right. And as part of that, the phase two design and scope of work that will happen this year also, included in that is the Farman's Landing design. And I have rolled that out personally. I met with many of the business and building owners along First Avenue there between the Panet and the bridge. And Century West had come up with a preliminary design for what the landing back there could look like along Sand Creek. And I presented that to them to get some feedback and their thoughts. Presented it to the chamber last week. And this is something that the public will see rolling out here soon, and we're going to invite more feedback on that as well.
Well, will that work take place this year?
That work, we don't know when that'll take place. This is an unfunded project. So, you know, best case scenario, hopefully we could find some funding, and maybe 2019-20 could be something to shoot for.
I have one question mm-hmm. about the revision between Cedar and Second.
On Cedar between 5th and 2nd.
Yeah. Okay. Is what about the Turvan, our historic Turvan?
What about it?
Yeah, is it staying?
Oh, there's we're not impacting any private business. Mm-hmm. We're only, you know, working with the
right of ways. It's the streets and the right of ways. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so we're basically what we're doing is we're rebuilding the sidewalks. It's really that simple, and then resurfacing the street. So included in that will be infrastructure like water, lights, electricity for lights, and that kind of thing. So really what you've already seen along other streets downtown, like Church, for instance, 2nd, 3rd, etc. So you'll see more of that. And then that will really be, you know, most of this work has already been done through downtown over the last 10 years. And so what you'll see through this project will be a completion of that downtown revitalization that's been a long time vision for downtown Sandpoint.
Another question I hear people ask is coming off from the lake downtown, you know, the city beach, that whole odd kind of corner there that goes up Church, coming on First Avenue, it's a little, is there any changes? I know you've been looking at it and assessing what to do maybe or not about that. Any ideas?
I'm glad you brought that up because that's kind of, there's ongoing discussions around that. And we've had our contractor take a look at that and make some recommendations. And we will be taking those recommendations and to the public and inviting more feedback on that as well. And the goal there, you know, I think so far we're doing pretty good. What came back from our contractor was a recommendation to eliminate all left turns there. So I think that'll be a tough one to swallow for the public. So we're gonna take that to Sandpoint to the citizens for more feedback and consideration on that. So there could be changes coming down the road with that intersection, but I can't say at this mm-hmm. time. It's too early.
I think one of the big things that when I look at what's going on there with traffic, is I don't know that everyone understands what it means to yield. So slow down and yield. Everyone yield to the next person. And whoever gets there first gets to go next, I guess is how that works.
That's right. Yep. And I should mention, too, while we're talking about this, that phase two of the sewer project will also happen this summer. So as you recall, this fall, we had the sewer main replacement from Superior up to Bridge Street along First Avenue there. That was about a 6 or 8 week project. That will continue this summer as well, and that will continue from Bridge Street around the corner on Cedar at 2nd. So that's something to be looking out for as well. And of course, we try and time all this to have, you know, the least amount of impact downtown, which basically means after the festival is really kind of the target for mm-hmm. that work.
Including the piece on Cedar Street that would be after the festival?
Unfortunately, that's going to take so much time that, you know, that really has to happen, you know, through the construction season. Yeah. The sewer work can happen relatively quickly, because they're really just kind of digging a trench down the middle of the road and then replacing the pipe and then covering it up. But the infrastructure work that's required with the street reconstruction is more involved.
Right. So heads up, folks, there's going to be some construction downtown.
Yeah. And I, you know, we recognize that this is, it's going to be uncomfortable for a period of time, but we also recognize that when it's all over, it's going to be the downtown standpoint that we've all been wanting. So,
mm-hmm. What do you think? Should we take a little musical break and just take a breather?
Sounds good.
Okay. Take a 3-minute breather here, and we'll come back. There's a lot of other stuff to talk about because mm-hmm. there's always so much going on in town. So, we're going to dive in on a bunch of different topics after a little musical break. What do you got, Susie?
It's exactly 3-minute song. It's Kate and Anna McGarrigle's song, My Town. And we will be right back, so stay with us. This is 88.5 KRFY, and this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. Stay with us. And that was Kate and Anna McGarrigle, My Town. And this is 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to The Morning Show on this Wednesday. And our guest today is Mayor Shelby Ronstad. Again, thanks for being here.
Pleasure. Yep. Pleasure, Susie and Chris. Thanks for having me. And
right
your
now we're taking a look ahead to stuff that people will see coming up in 2018 with the city. And of course, there's a ton of stuff to talk about. But potluck, what's the next topic you potluck, want to let people know about?
Well, I wanted to mention that Ryan Luttman is our public works director for about 2 years now, and he tendered his resignation last week, about a week ago, and a little over a week. And Ryan, like I say, has been with us for a couple years. He's really been a pleasure to work with. He got roped in by Century West, who's a civil engineering firm throughout the region. So he's going to continue to be in the area. He's going to help them open up an office here locally. And we certainly wish him and his family the best in his future endeavors. But we are going to miss him at the city. So soon we will be looking for a new director to fill his shoes there.
That's the public works. He took the position that Cody Van Dyke had for
That's
years.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And then Shannon Scythe is also retiring at the end of this month. Gosh, by next week. So Shannon's been with us for about 15 years, over 15 years. She has just been such a huge benefit to the city on so many ways, just provided such great leadership over the years. And she was really instrumental in passing the city's first financial reserve policy this last year. And she also, let's see, I think it was 2016, or was it 2017? I'm getting them mixed up now. She basically brought it to council's attention that this was an opportunity for us to refinance our wastewater bond. So she was really instrumental in that, and that saved our ratepayers $5 million. Five years of payments on that bond, and saved the ratepayers about $1 million. So that was, just an example of some of the ways that she was really...
That probably covered her salary at least.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's great work when we have public servants that are looking for those opportunities. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely.
But while we're on the subject of staff, we've had a city manager now for a year and a half or 2 years.
That's right.
Jennifer Stapleton.
Yep,
Jennifer. How's that working since it was kind of a new paradigm for the city?
Yeah, it's been 2 years now for Jennifer, and she has completely transformed the entire city, in my view. I work with her hand in hand, and not only has she been a pleasure to work with, but she really has just provided such fantastic leadership and guidance for the rest of our leadership team. She's just working inside and out internally, refining our systems and creating efficiencies and better protocols throughout the city. And then she has such great outreach and engagement skills with the community as well, and has really just got her eye on the ball 24/7. So she's been a huge addition for the city. That was money well spent by the public there. Mm-hmm. Moving on, I want to mention a couple of big projects coming up in public works. I guess on the lighter side, we are hoping to get some, it looks like we're likely to get some funding for a Pine Street sidewalk project. And we did receive some funding, grant funding for an Oak Street bike lane project, and that's going to bid here shortly. So that's something that we'll see come up in 2018.
But where would the sidewalk be on Pine?
On Pine, they are along Pine between, gosh, I can't tell you the entire length, but they basically go by City Hall there. So I'm not sure if it goes the entire length from Boyer up to Division.
Okay.
But that's area, the target. Right? Yep. Okay. Yep.
It's one of those areas where you have to walk in the street. We have a lot of areas like that in town where we actually have sidewalks.
Yeah. That's right. Yep. And that's really important when we're trying to create safe routes to schools. And that's where this funding came from, is really trying to create those safe pedestrian routes so kids can get to school without having to walk in the street. Mm. And then also we've got a wastewater plant that is far beyond its useful life. So this is something that voters certainly need to be aware of. They're going to hear more and more about it this year. We have engaged JUB Engineering, an engineering firm throughout the region that is helping us to put together a really good plan as to how to move forward. We're looking at a new plant we're looking at several options, whether to basically revise the existing plant, upgrade it, which, as I said, it's at the end of its useful life. So, we're kind of at that ideal opportunity where it really just makes sense to just kind of start over. There are a few components that we could carry over and use from there, but for the most part, this is, no matter how we cut it, this is going to be a huge public investment.
There was a purchase of land out on Baldy at one time, with the idea of moving the plant out there. Is that still one of the options being looked
Absolutely.
At?
Absolutely. Hmm. Yeah. So we're basically looking at two options, and one is to move the plant out there. It's a 37-acre site off of Baldy Road, just west of the railroad tracks there. Currently, there's a disc golf course there. So the disc golf course could stay, theoretically, but
with
it would have to be...
With some new hazards.
With some new hazards. That's right. But this plant would take up, somewhere in the area of, if it were out there, it would take up somewhere in the area of 7 to 10 acres, presumably. If it remained at the existing site, which is the other consideration, then the footprint would also have to be expanded a little bit. It's a very small site. It's about 5 acres. There is a little bit of room to the east, about an acre, and then there's a little bit of room to the north. If it were to happen there, it would take over kind of the Bonner County Museum there and the Lakeview Park area. It would take over a significant portion of that.
Into that a bit.
That's right.
On the other hand, if it did move to out to Boyer, then that area becomes available as an addition to the park system.
That's right. We are looking at, if we keep it at the existing site, and even though it would expand a little bit into Lakeview Park there, we would preserve the native plant garden there. And it would also enable us to move the fence on the shoreline further to the north. So we could still open up that shoreline to public access for a trail and along there. So I think there's still some benefits to be had, even if it stayed in terms of public recreation and access, if it stayed at the existing location. The advantage to keeping it there, of course, is cost. We don't have an exact number yet, but it would save, at this point, we're estimating somewhere in the ballpark of $10 to $15 million if we kept it at the existing location.
No kidding. That's the savings. So how will this be?
Big numbers.
How will this be financed?
Either probably by, bond would be the route that we could go. For the balance. And when I say balance, there are funds out there. There are federal and state funds, a number of different grant opportunities that are out there that could pay as much as 75% of the cost of this. But I say balance. These are huge numbers we're talking about. I think at the very least, and I'm hesitant to put any number out there because I don't want to get people's expectations up. But, you know, these kind of projects go anywhere from $50 to $100 million, even for a project on the scale of, you know, Sandpoint size. So so there's so many considerations to take into account here. You know, obviously we have to accommodate for future growth. We don't know. That's a very difficult thing to try and determine how much growth do we want to plan on. Do we want to consider regionalization as part of that growth? Do we want to extend that wastewater service to Kootenai, Pendre, Dover, out into the county, et cetera? So these are all difficult questions that have to be considered as part of this. Because, you know, with this project, we're not just looking at the next, you know, 10 to 20 years. We're looking at the next 40 to 50 to 60 years. So even though in terms of bonding and all that, the plan is, it's a 20-year plan, but really, I mean, the plant that we're using right now was built in the 40s. So, and here we are, yeah, 80 years later.
Might be due.
So, yeah, exactly.
Are there any benefits, Shelby, to moving it out to the outside of town there to protect the waterways by moving it? Are we assuring maybe more protection for our water?
Actually, no, I hear what you're saying. So the discharge is a special part of the permit. It's actually separate from our NPDES permit, it's called. And so that really, our consultant tells us that it's really not feasible to even consider moving that. So where that is today is it moves from our existing Lakeview plant, and it goes about 900 feet out into the river and discharges right there. And that would have to remain regardless of where we put the plant. So
is treatment and one is discharge.
That's right. Right. Yep.
But to be clear, it's treated right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just discharging.
No, but we're talking about moving the treatment part of the plant.
The treatment plant would move out, but there'd still be a pipe that extends out that might not be even visible at that point, I guess. But
right.
There's a lot of considerations, and it's not straightforward.
Yeah, and I mean, we could talk all day about this one, but I just want to bring this to your listeners' attention, and that we will be coming out with a lot more information about this in the very near future. And we'll be inviting public feedback on this as well, because this is not something that we're going to resolve in a week. It's this is going to be an ongoing conversation through the year. So, I think we've got a great team working on it, and we've got a citizen advisory team that helps us address some of the immediate, I guess, the concerns that from the public's perspective, and then of course we have a technical advisory team that outside of our contractor that's really making sure that we're thinking about all the technical aspects and technology out there. So moving on, I do want to mention a couple of things that I have a little bit of a legislative update as well. I serve on the AIC Board of Directors, Association of Idaho Cities, and it looks like there's a couple of issues that were really pertinent for the city of Sandpoint. We have Senate Bill 1206, which is known as the surplus eliminator, and there was a little bit of an issue as that was passed last year that allows for excess funding in the state budget that goes to road projects for local jurisdictions. And fortunately, we were concerned that we had a couple of projects in the docket that we were expecting that funding, and it was literally a typo in the bill as it was passed last year, and so we were concerning that funding was not going to be available. And I'm hearing now we have a team down in Boise right now, and I'm hearing that it looks like that funding will be available this year. So that's great. And one of the things that we're looking at funding with that project is Ontario sidewalks. Two things actually: sidewalks on Ontario near the school there. Forsberg Charter. Thank you. Yeah. And then also resurfacing of Ellis Street from Pine Street to Lighthouse. So those are two projects that we're excited will also happen this year. And then House Bill 67 is also unlikely to be approved. And House Bill 67 is the grocery repeal tax. And why that's significant, I will say that philosophically, I'm in support of the idea that that Idahoans shouldn't pay taxes on groceries. And I think that's great.
In three years,
that's right. And why I say that is because the voters passed the local option tax in 2015, and that will expire at the end of 2020. And that pays off our War Memorial Field project, which, as I'm sure your listeners know, the grandstands have been completed, and we're now looking at doing a new field out there as well. So if this bill had passed and it's in its form in 2016
or last then, 2017, well, it came up, and actually the governor vetoed the repeal of the grocery tax. So it's going to come up again this year.
It looks unlikely to pass this year is what I'm hearing from Boise now. So and what I have requested of our legislators is if they do pass it, that they exempt the local option taxes for cities in Idaho that have the LOT, because those are voter approved, and the voters have passed them already with the expectation that those funds would be there to complete the capital project. So anyways, that's good news for War Memorial Field project and for the city's bottom line.
On Memorial Field, there is still a question of the type of turf that we might install there. Could be artificial, or it could be improved natural grass, or it could be some kind of hybrid. What's that process?
Yeah, I think it's a little too early for me to comment on that. I know Jennifer Stapleton has been working on that project. She has a team of stakeholders, if you will, that have been coming up with a great proposal. And I don't want to steal her thunder. That'll be coming out here in the next few weeks. So I would just invite your listeners to look forward to that. But I think we found a solution that's going to work great for everybody.
Okay.
So that way you get a little suspense for the next show.
Well, yeah, what's going to happen with the turf? Okay.
But that is a good segue into our Parks Master Plan, which is the next, major planning initiative that's happening with the city. That'll be coming up soon. And when we're looking at the Parks Master Plan, of course, we're looking at every city-owned piece of property. Included in that is, of course, City Beach, Farman's Landing. Those are two big ones, I think, that'll get special attention. There hasn't been a significant investment in City Beach since it was created. So this would really be a great opportunity for the public to take a good hard look at the beach, and are we getting the most out of that we possibly could? Are there other opportunities? As well as Farman's Landing that I mentioned to you, we'll be taking a look at that as well. There's kind of two sides to that. There's the engineering and stormwater management component that goes with the downtown street reversion, and it's looking at parking and that kind of stuff. But then there's also recreation and amenity components of that. And
so access to Sand Creek right there.
That's right.
A great waterfront spot. That's right. We kind of overlook it.
That's right. So we're really trying to look at all those opportunities with the Parks Master Plan revision and see if there's more that we can get out of our existing parks, including our ball fields. And I guess I'll cede you a little bit here. So I say ball fields because we think we found a good solution to the turf problem that would also include some of our other ball fields. Mm. So, and then I think a really big one is the Little Sand Creek watershed. Currently, the city owns about 4,000 acres up there, up the toward Schweitzer Basin, and along Schweitzer Road. That is actually owned by the utility, and never before has there been any recreation in there. Well, a couple years ago, City Council approved the Watershed Crest Trail concept, which is a crestline trail that goes around the watershed. And that is phase one is currently completed up there. It's a multi-year project. It could be up to 25 mile or so loop. But it really opened up the door to other opportunities for recreational use, appropriate recreational use up in our watershed. And certainly increasingly we see that other municipalities throughout the country and beyond have found that conservation and limited recreation can go hand in hand and be a perfect match. So as we're considering the Parks Master Plan, I think it only makes sense to look at the watershed and are there opportunities up there that would benefit our economy, would benefit quality of life here and give other recreation opportunities to not just our locals and our residents, but visitors as well, and that we should really take into consideration.
And we have just a few minutes left. Do you have one or two topics you want to still touch on? Because we have things we could ask.
Okay. Well, yeah, go for it, Chris.
Well, one thing is that affects our city residents is this proposed silicone smelter in Newport. Is there any action contemplated there? Is the city council looking at that?
Yeah. So I have actually been convening an informational panel that I'm hoping to, we haven't picked a date yet. We're shooting for sometime in February. I probably don't want to say too much too early, but I'm hoping for February 28th. There's still a couple other dates that we're kicking around. So this would be an opportunity for, what I've done is I've gone out and invited experts on the subject to participate in a panel. There's roughly 9 participants at this point. And to really just provide information around what is proposed and what the potential impacts could be and why it's of concern to the city of Sandpoint. So from that, I'm hoping that that some next steps could come to light that would empower citizens and the city of Sandpoint to take appropriate action. And
to at least have a voice in that process of citing a potential smelter. Although we should mention, this is still in the very preliminary stages over in Newport, the smelter. So no decisions have been made there. The state of Washington has to go through quite an extensive environmental review of the permits that have been requested there. So, but it's a good idea for Sandpoint to look ahead to the future and what might be coming.
Absolutely. And to all your listeners, I've invited Chris Bessler to be the mediator in that panel.
Okay. You tell him that.
Okay. Do you think, is High Test one of the groups that
they
you'd be bringing
in?
They are,
yeah. I have spoken with High Test, Vice
That's
President.
That's the owners or the developers of the smelter.
That's right, yeah. And I am, at this point, I'm expecting their participation. So kind of keeping my fingers crossed on that one. And other participants, I guess I can mention at this point, would include ICL and Lake Pendere Waterkeepers, Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Ecology in Washington, to name a few. So, mm-hmm.
A comprehensive.
And of course, the CANS group, mm-hmm. Citizens Against the Newport Smelter.
And that would be a comprehensive group because it's a comprehensive subject and it's the initial look at it for the citizens to find out more.
That's right.
Okay. Well, you know, we are out of time, yeah. Kind of. And we just really want to thank you. You're a great guest for the morning show because you have a lot to say because the city news and what's going on there is very large and comprehensive, again. So thank you so much. Mayor Shelby Ron said, as you go into your third year as our mayor, we can only say thank you for your service and thanks for coming in and sharing so much about the city with us.
Thank you, Susie. Thank you, Chris. And thank you to all the listeners out there.
Yes, and this is 88.5 KRFY. We don't have much time left, but tomorrow on the morning show, Jack Peterson and Jim Healy, their guests will be Ben Olson to talk about the upcoming play at the Panada, Death of a Small Town. That's at 8 on 88.5 KRFY. So we're going to go off with a Bruce Springsteen song. This is My Hometown. We hope you have a beautiful day.
Bye now.